Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Deng Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Tuesday, August 7th, 2018. The head of an opposition group says he agreed to sign the Khartoum deal, but big issues remain.
Most of us did not like to sign the agreement. That is a given fact.
And some South Sudanese living in Kampala say they hope this deal leads to real peace.
We are not 100% sure, but in fact we pray in order to be implemented, not to be like 2015 agreement which has been signed. So we want this time everlasting peace.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Some opposition parties that signed the power-sharing deal in Khartoum on Sunday night say they did so to give peace a chance, even though they disagree with some of the provisions in the agreement. They say the mediators have promised to open further discussions on the contentious issues in the Sudanese capital. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
IGAD issued a press release today in which the regional bloc said President Omar al-Bashir shall continue facilitating the talks until a revitalized peace agreement for South Sudan is finally signed. IGAD said Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta will send a team of experts to support the continuation of IGAD-brokered peace process in Khartoum. Benghazi Joseph Bakasoro, leader of the South Sudan National Movement for Change, says initially the South Sudan Opposition Alliance and the former detainees did not want to sign the deal because some of their demands were not included in the agreement, such as reverting back to the original 10 states. He says his group accepted to sign the deal after Sudanese Foreign Minister Al-Dildiri Muhammad Ahmad assured the opposition group in writing that he will reopen discussions on the outstanding issues in the next round of talks.
Most of us did not like to sign the agreement. That is a given fact. But based and respect to the heads of the states, and again accepting that any outstanding issue is subject for further discussion, I think we have to succumb to that, and we are waiting to start a debate on the outstanding issues.
Both the South Sudan Opposition Alliance and the former detainees raise concerns about a provision in the deal that provides for a formation of an independent boundaries commission to determine the number of states in the Republic of South Sudan. Bakasoro says his group, which is part of the South Sudan Opposition Alliance, only agreed to sign the deal with the caveat that such issues will be resolved in a timely fashion.
That made us to sign the agreement, and we are hoping that in the near future, as depending on the schedule, we are going to continue the discussion to finalize on the outstanding issues and then to complete the HLRF, and then we wait for the final signing.
Peter Mayan, head of the People's Liberal Party, which is part of an umbrella group referred to as other political parties, says his group agreed to sign the deal with the same understanding. He says the success or failure of the agreement will depend on whether or not it is implemented.
South Sudanese really are in dire need of peace, irrespective of the positions of the parties, irrespective of the outstanding issues. People want guns to go silent. People want opportunity in order to rebuild the economic. And people also want to embark in a genuine democratic progress and transformation.
Mayan says once a final agreement is signed, all warring parties must work to provide services to the South Sudanese and develop the country. The armed opposition group, the National Salvation Front, led by General Thomas Shrilo, did not sign the agreement. Jelfan Samson, the group's Information and Public Relations Secretary, says the NAS believes the deal fails to guarantee a federal system of governance. Samson says he believes the power-sharing and governance agreement in its current form is unlikely to restore lasting peace, but his group will continue to work with the mediators and other parties to restore peace and stability in South Sudan.
NAS is for peace and is working to achieve that peace. But we want the peace that will be a justice peace for every individual South Sudan, regardless of their tribes, regardless of their political affiliations, regardless of their religions, regardless of their colors. We want all the people of South Sudan to be united for the sake of South Sudan.
Samson says he is also concerned that the governance deal does not address the root causes of the conflict in South Sudan, and therefore is not a genuine peace deal. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum, Sudan.
The leader of the National Salvation Front, or NAS, says his group is opposed to the power-sharing deal signed in Khartoum by several armed and unarmed groups. General Thomas Cirilo Swaka says NAS has not authorized any person to sign the deal on its behalf, and Major General Julius Tabule Daniel, who declared himself the interim chairman of NAS and signed the deal, is not the legitimate representative of NAS.
We have few individuals within us who are really not satisfied with what NAS is doing in terms of this peace process, because for them, they just want to go to Juba. Maybe they're tired, and for their own reasons, they decided to leave NAS. But again, it is not a question of that they want to go to Juba, but they were in contact with security authorities in Juba, you see, to cause problems within NAS. So they have been doing that for some time. We have been monitoring them through our intelligence. And finally, they decided to go to Khartoum. This is Major General Julius, who is staying in Kampala, and with three or four people. I think you went through, what... they were doing in Khartoum in terms of meeting President Kiir in Juba to present themselves as if, they're supporters of the government. So the other individuals are those who are in Khartoum, Dr. Gassim Barnaba, Kisanga, and those of Khalid Boutros. In fact, they were organized to sign on behalf of NAS. By some people.
Looking at the names of the people you're listing here, Khalid Boutros was your deputy chief of staff, quite a senior guy in your organization. What is the impact of his departure from your group?
In fact, there is no much impact. But though we respect that idea, this is their right to choose the way they want to go. But in fact, he's staying in Khartoum. He's staying in Khartoum, and he's not in the field with the forces. And of course, as one of us, we value his presence with us. But when he decided to feel like, he cannot continue with us and he's tired maybe, and he wants to go to Juba for many reasons. Some of the reasons are that, in fact, some are promised to be governors like the other fellow who left also, Simon. And others were given some money to support their families, and so forth and so forth. So this is an individual decision for their own interests. So we respect that. But National Salvation Front is firm. National Salvation Front, our forces throughout South Sudan, in Bahr Ghazal, in Upper Nile, and Equatoria, our forces are firm and are doing their normal duties.
Julius Tabule Daniel issued a statement on Monday saying that he is now the interim chairman of the National Salvation Front. Who is the leader of the National Salvation Front? Because you have two people here all claiming to be leaders. I mean, you formed the group, and now Tabule is saying you are no longer the leader.
I'm sorry to say that Tabule is, we know him very well. During the struggle, he was with us. He was an adjutant to one of our senior commanders. And later on, during this time of peace, he was appointed as a commissioner in Kajukaji. And he was there spying for the government and, accusing his fellow community people in Kajukaji. Some of them, in fact, met their fate, and some of them were in prison. So at that time, he was captured. He was going somewhere in Kajukaji, and the forces of IO by then captured him, and he was in the prison, and the people just gave him mercy and spared his life. And And later on, he was released and he decided, you know, to be with National Salvation Front. And people, of course, welcomed him. And after that, he went to Kampala, to Uganda, where his family is. And he was there. But again, after he arrived in Kampala, he immediately established his previous contacts with Juba as security agents. Then our intelligence were following him. And finally, he was made to cause confusion within NAS because he's just staying in Kampala, not in the field. Our forces are intact even in Kajukaji.
You opted not to sign the power-sharing deal. Now, most people are saying your action is like blocking the road to peace. What is your reaction to that?
National Salvation Front will never block any genuine peace. You know, when you say peace, you know, National Salvation Front is saying, you know, it is not just peace, but you want that dignified peace, you know, that can bring unity of our people back, that can really, you know, make our people to be proud of their nation, that can make us to live in a society of justice, that can make us to live in a society where we respect ourselves as human beings and allow our people to practice their freedoms. This is what National Salvation Front is fighting for. And therefore, the issue of peace at the moment that we are now negotiating, we are saying, you see, we need a peace that can empower the people of South Sudan. We need a peace that can give this power, which is taken by the Kiir regime, back to our people.
That's General Thomas Cirilo Swaka, leader of the National Salvation Front, who says his group refused to sign the power-sharing deal. He was speaking with my colleague John Tanza from Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, this past hour. Some South Sudanese living in the Ugandan capital, Kampala, have welcomed the new power-sharing deal the country's warring parties signed on Sunday night. But they say the party's leaders should put their personal interests aside and honor their commitment to restoring peace across the country. Magume Davis Wakarinch has more for VOA from Kampala.
Moses Mao, who hails originally from Goguryeo State, says he's happy that both the opposition and the government are committed to bring peace to the people of South Sudan.
This is what we need. We are not 100% sure, but in fact we pray in order to be implemented, not to be like 2015 agreement which has been signed. So we want this time everlasting peace, that each and every citizen should be free and move day and night.
The agreement will see rebel leader Riek Machar return to South Sudan as first vice president. Four other vice presidents will be appointed. In addition, there will be a cabinet of 35 ministers, all appointed by the transitional government, while the National Legislative Assembly will be expanded to 550 lawmakers. Anna Ayada, who hails from Yiro in Eastern Lake States, says she too is happy to hear the warring parties signed a power-sharing deal, but she says the proposed cabinet is bloated.
We don't have enough resources to maintain all those, the vice presidents that have been selected. But still, I also don't trust whether or not the agreement that has already been signed yesterday is going to be followed. Because many agreements have already been signed before, many talks have been made, but still nothing has helped South Sudan. That's why I'm saying like that. That's why I still have doubt.
Mangat Joseph Munyukwil, who hails from Malakal, which is one of the areas worst hit during the 5-year conflict, agrees that South Sudan cannot afford the cost of maintaining a cabinet of 35 ministers and 350 MPs.
If it was even possible, you'd have even seen three presidents. It's only that it's not possible that did not happen. But still, it is a positive thing because if you can give everybody what they want, maybe then they'll stop fighting. And with time, we can come back to our senses and create something that can be seen as genuine and helpful.
South Sudanese Peter Taban, a student at the International University of East Africa here in Kampala, says this is the time for leaders to put their personal interests aside and work toward making South Sudan a better place to live.
I hope that it will bring the everlasting peace to our communities. It will mark our suffering here in the foreign countries. We hope even our refugees here in Uganda will go back to their places.
The warring parties will continue to discuss details of security arrangements and implementation modalities in Khartoum before they sign a final peace agreement. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarind in Kampala, Uganda.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The World Food Programme says widespread food shortages remain in Jonglei. Find out more when we return.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
should primary school be free?
Yes, because it's the foundation of education, so every foundation should be free, given to everybody, should be free.
Yes, totally free. This is because most, especially the low class in Kenya, anywhere in Africa, you find that they have very many kids and they have no the capital to take them to school. And
I strongly condemn the freeness of primary schools. Why? Because mostly I can say free things are never better. They will never push you.
I think it should be free because here in Malawi, most of the families are poor.
Don't think so, because in primary is the foundation of education. And we know anything free is expensive at the end of it all.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. The Relief and Rehabilitation Commission, or RRC, in Jonglei State says more than a million people in Greater Jonglei have nothing to eat this year. A spokesman with the World Food Programme in South Sudan says his agency is providing food assistance to about 1 million people in Jonglei, but admits the agency is unable to reach some food insecure areas due to the rainy season, which makes roads impassable. Deng Gai Deng has the story for VOA from Bor.
Bor resident Andrew Lweth says both insecurity and poor rainfall this year have made it difficult for farmers like him to produce food.
During the starting of the rain, so the rain was raining too much, but right now the rain is not going well. But so that is another thing that has affected people.
The RRC director for Greater Jonglei, Gabriel Deng Ajak, says the situation has been made worse by insecurity caused by the conflict. Ajak says people are in dire need of food assistance this year, especially in the areas of Akobo, Pochala, Pangak, Pibor, Ayut, and Greater Twitch.
We have the IPC report which indicates Greater Jonglei to have 1.2 million people who are in dire need of food security. So this is a report we are working upon in the entire Greater Jonglei. And we will work very closely with all the partners to see into it that the 1.2 million people are safe with the necessary supply that they need at this particular moment.
Lweth says persistent food shortages have forced many area residents, including people from his own family, to leave the area for internally displaced person camps or refugee camps.
More than five from my relative and also from our family also have gone there to refugee camp like Ailo. So they are trying there to be together so that they can have access to food distribution.
Despite the negotiations in Khartoum these past few weeks to get a final South Sudan peace deal signed, Ajak says South Sudanese continue to leave their homes in search of food.
Indeed, people have been moving for the last 2 weeks. People have been going to the refugee camp in Uganda and in Kenya in search for food, and this is something that we want to discourage.
The RRC director says insecurity continues to make it difficult for people to farm and also for aid agencies to access some areas where there are vulnerable people. He says once there is a final peace deal in place and security improves, it will be easier to access the vulnerable. Thompson Fihiri, a spokesperson for the World Food Programme in South Sudan, says the WFP is doing its best to deliver assistance to the people in need in the Greater Jonglei area.
We are also providing super cereal, which is nutrition supplements targeting women who are expecting, as well as those who are nursing, as well as children under the age of five.
Pihiri says one of the biggest challenges WFP faces is access to the most vulnerable people in South Sudan.
This is the peak of the hunger season, but it coincides with the rainy season. And that sort of cuts access for us. Roads become impassable. Even 6x6, even 8x8 trucks cannot access some of the places that we would like to be.
Pihiri says WAP is in touch with local authorities on the ground to help them access some of the areas that are in greatest need of assistance. He says WAP will keep trying to reach as many people as they can. Ajak and Luet are calling on South Sudan warring parties participating in the peace talks in neighboring Sudan to move quickly to sign a final peace deal and restore peace and security so that citizens can return to producing their own food. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
It's time for our Tuesday Health segment, and today we are talking about containing the Ebola outbreak in the Democratic Republic of Congo. The World Health Organization says vaccinations are expected to begin this week, perhaps as early as tomorrow, to help stem the outbreak in the eastern part of the country. WHO estimates put the numbers of confirmed and probable cases of Ebola at 43. Including 34 deaths. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
The WHO says the same expert team that led the vaccination program during a recent Ebola outbreak in Congo's Equator province will be deployed to the cities of Beni and Mangina in North Kivu province, where Ebola was detected last week. It says vaccinations in North Kivu will follow the same ring vaccination method. That means people most at risk of infection, such as health workers and first responders, will be vaccinated first. They will be followed by family members, neighbors, and other people identified as having come in contact with Ebola victims. Tracing contacts could be dangerous in North Kivu's highly insecure environment. WHO spokesman Tarek Jazarevich says some of the people exposed to the deadly Ebola virus might be living in conflict zones, and armed guards may have to be used to protect the health workers. He tells VOA that WHO personnel will have to work with UN peacekeeping forces known as MONUSCO.
For example, MONUSCO is already sent some security in haste vehicles to Beni on August 5th, and we may need to use these sort of vehicles. But again, at this stage, we are trying really to do what is needed to be done. So the recommendation from the SAGE is to use ring vaccination.
Jazarevich says the World Health Organization and partners are working nonstop to contain and stop this latest outbreak of Ebola as quickly as possible. He says 30 WHO staff members have been deployed to the area and more experts are on the way. He says contact tracing has begun in affected zones. While more than 900 contacts have been registered in Mangina, he says this operation must be rapidly strengthened. He notes the cost of responding to this disease is likely to be significant, especially in view of the security situation. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
August 7th in Kenya marks the day of the worst terrorist attack in the country's history. On this day, 20 years ago, a truck bomb destroyed the U.S. Embassy in Nairobi, killing 213 people, most of them Kenyans. In Nairobi, hundreds gathered today to remember victims of the brutal attack. Mohamed Yusuf has this report for VOA.
This picture happened in 1994. We got our child firstborn.
Pamela Olum was in the hospital the day of the embassy bombing. 3 days earlier, she gave birth to her third child. She says her husband came to see her at the Mater Hospital and to pay the bill. He gave her 5,000 shillings for her 17,000 shilling bill and left for the bank to get the rest of the money. Olum says he left and she never saw him again. Lawrence Olum was one of the people killed on August 7, 1998, when Al-Qaeda exploded truck bombs in front of the U.S. embassies in Nairobi and in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania. The attacks killed a total of 224 people and injured nearly 5,000. On Tuesday, about 200 people, including survivors, gathered at a memorial park in Nairobi to honor the victims of the attack and offer prayers. Participants lighted candles and laid flowers as a sign of remembrance. Teddy Giannopoulos came to honor her 51-year-old sister, who worked at the U.S. Embassy at the time of the bombings.
There isn't a day that we can forget her. She's very much alive in our minds, but this day is a very painful day for all of us. Her family, her children, her grandchildren now, which she didn't get to see, of course.
Kenya National Counterterrorism Center Director Martin Kimani says his country still faces the threat of terrorism.
Kenya was injured in an extraordinary way 20 years ago. And today, 20 years later, Kenya remains threatened by terrorism and terrorists. But our country has taken giant strides to prepare better, to be more ready.
Despite the deaths and violence meted on the embassy staff and innocent people, U.S. Ambassador Robert Godek said, in the midst of evil carried out by terrorists, he saw humanity.
At the same moment, the moment of terrible terror, that atrocity, the attack, we also saw great heroism. We saw so many embassy staff, Kenyans, people coming together to help rescue those who were injured, to help retrieve those who had been killed, to help to begin the process of rebuilding and working together.
For Pamela Olu, life has been difficult, but she survived the years to overcome the pain and educate our children. Her firstborn is a DJ, one is a university graduate, and the thirdborn was accepted into a top Kenyan university this year. Mohamed Yusuf for VA News, Nairobi.
And that's our show for this Tuesday. We leave you with the song Yesu Moto Moto by Barakole Taduta. To Barakole Taduda with the song Yesu Moto Moto. I'm Ayan Deng Bior in Washington. We appreciate you tuning us in. We'd like to know what you think about the show. You can contact us at southsudan@voanews.com or reach us on Facebook. Our title is South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.